The Philco Corporation presents Great Moments in Sportscasting, recorded highlights of the past as selected by Sports Illustrated magazine and narrated for Philco by Sports Illustrated Special Events Director Keith Morris.
According to history, big-time athletic events in America have been part of the national scene ever since the first Thanksgiving when the Pilgrims ran races with the Indians. Since then, the records have been full of reports about sports events and the people who take part in them. The heroes are many, and the heroes are great, who swing the bats and snag the flies out at the old ballpark. You can find the records in stories, fables, poems, and even songs. Then came the invention that put practically every American on the spot for the play-by-play or blow-by-blow action. Radio and later television came to practically every living room and automobile, and even out on picnics. And along with the athletes themselves, another group of men became famous as a result, the sports announcers. Listen now to the voices of both, the players and the reporters, as we relive some of the great moments in sports casting. Moments like the one in the Polo Grounds. It's October 1951. The Giants and the Dodgers are tied for the pennant, and this is the playoff game to decide who'll meet the Yankees in the World Series. Last of the ninth, the Dodgers lead 4-2. The Giants' hopes are fading fast. Announcer Russ Hodges is reporting.
One out, last of the night. Bracken pitches. Bobby Thompson takes a strike call on the inside corner. Bobby hitting at 292. He's had a single and a double, and he drove in the Giants' first run with a long fly to center. Brooklyn leads at 4-2. Hartung down the line at third, not taking any chances. Blocks without too big of a lead at second, but he'll be running like the wind if Thompson hits one. Bracken throws. There's a long strike! I saw it be, I believe! The Giants run the pennant! 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 Bobby Thompson hits into the lower deck of the left field stand! The Giants run the pennant! And they're going crazy! They're going crazy!
It was one of the most thrilling moments in baseball history. But out of the sight of the general public, the men who took part lived their moments of victory or defeat in their various ways. And the radio public lived those moments with them as the microphones moved into the dressing room. For Bobby Thompson, the world looked mighty good.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Hello, buddy.
Bobby, you drove in your 98th, 99th. Oh, how do you feel?
It was the third one I drove in.
Bobby Thompson, did you fall down coming around third?
I wasn't even, I didn't touch the ground one foot around.
You just flew on, Bobby.
Oh,
that's wonderful.
Oh, it was a bad high that inside is. Fastball.
Oh, you said a bad high inside.
Oh, I don't know. Good living, I don't know what it is.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
But just a few feet away in the Brooklyn Dodgers dressing room, Ralph Branca, who pitched the fateful ball, had one more job to do that day. He must meet the press. In defeat, that can be a very difficult job.
Let me alone. Go ahead, let me alone. Let me be, will you? You saw what happened. Things are tough enough. Yeah, I knew it was gone all the way. All I kept saying was, sink, sink, sink. I knew he hit the ball, he uppercutted, hit the ball with overspin. It was like a curveball. It was sinking down. All I remember is seeing Paff go up against the wall, and then I was walking to the clubhouse. All I kept saying was, why me, why me? Why did he have to be me?
Yes, the story of sports holds many memories. Moments of triumph, moments of disappointment, and sometimes surprising memories, too. Thousands of fans were listening one Sunday afternoon in December as a game got underway between the Brooklyn Football Dodgers and the Giants football team. Not many fans would remember the details of that game, but none of them will forget this moment.
The Dodgers are ready to kick off now. They've just scored. Ace Parker did it. John Sutherland's boys lead the Giants 7-0. Here's the whistle. Merrill Condon comes up. He boots it. It's a long one down to around the 3-yard line. Ward Cup takes it. He's cutting up to his left. He's over the 10. Nice block there by Lehman. Cup still going. He's up to the 25. And now he's hit and hit hard about the 27-yard line. Bruiser Kennard made the tackle.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you this important bulletin from the United Press. Flash, Washington. The White House announces Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. Stay tuned to WOR for further developments, which will be broadcast immediately as received.
Memories? The world of sports is full of them. Times, places, events, and most of all, people. Some great, some pitiful, some funny, and just a few immortal. But of all of them, there was only one, Babe Ruth.
I've had three ambitions in my life. One was to hit 700 home runs. The other was to play 20 years. And the next one was to be in 10 World Series. I succeeded in one last year, making my 10th World Series. And next year gives me the opportunity to play in 20 years. And if I hit 46 home runs, I'll have my 700 home runs, and I'll sure be satisfied with everything.
Babe was one of those rare adults who could make you glad you were a kid. He thrilled thousands of youngsters with words like these.
If there ever was a time that I'm going to try to hit a home run, it's sure going to be today for you boys.
Even at the end of his career, when the Babe knew he was dying of cancer, his first interest was still baseball. Standing in the Yankee Stadium, the house that Ruth built, he painfully told thousands of listening fans,
"Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You know how bad my voice sounds. Well, it feels just as bad. You know that."
These are Babe Ruth's words just 2 days before his death. It was to be the Babe's last appearance before the microphones.
"And grow up to know how to play ball. Then you come to the boys you see representing themselves today in your national pastime. The only real game, I think, in the world, baseball. There's been so many lovely things said about me, and I'm glad that I've had the opportunity to thank everybody. Thank you."
Untimely death ended the career of one of the most loved and admired men in the field. As long as the game is played, they'll remember Newt Rockne. Thanks to the ubiquitous microphone, here's the way Newt Rockne sounded when he and his team were alone in the Notre Dame locker room.
"On the success of any team, men, based on team play, same as it's shown all year. Sacrifice, unselfish sacrifice. These other fellas, they say, are pretty good, but I think we're better. And I think if we get ourselves keyed up to a point, we're confident of that, why, the results will take care of themselves.
All right, now in the kickoff,
if we receive, the three men drop back on the receiver and block long, at all Notre Dame style. If we kick off, with the rest of these teams walk, let's run down fast. This is as fast as you can run. And then we go on defense. And on defense, I want the center in and out of that line according to the situation. Use your old head. And I want you guards charging through as far as you can go on every play. Expect the play right over you every time. And the tacklers, I want you to go in a yard and a half and then check yourself. Spread your feet, squat down low, and be ready with your hands and elbows. So you won't be sideswiped. But I want the ends in there fast every play. Every play, but under control. And you men in the backfield there, I want you to analyze before you move. And if it's all forward pass, wait till you see the ball in the air. And then go and get it. And when we get it, boys, that's when we go on offense. That's when we go to. And don't forget we're going to pick it on one tackle they've got this week. We're going inside them. We're going outside them. Inside them and outside them. And when we get them on the run once, we're going to keep them on the run. And we're not going to pass unless our secondary comes up too close. But don't forget, man, we're going to get them on the run. We're going to go. And we aren't going to stop until we go to that goal line. And don't forget, man, today's the day we're going to win. They can't lick us. And the best out of the goal. The first whistle of the man win there. Fight. What do you say, man?
And speaking of names, remember that cheerful fellow who starred first as a pitcher and then as one of baseball's most unusual announcers? There was always something doing when Dizzy Dean was around.
"I ain't a ball player anymore. I'm a baseball broadcaster and a good one, too. What if I did say he slid into third or he was throwed out at second? Besides, where do folks get off criticizing my grammar? Chuck's only went up to the second grade, and if I'd have gone up to the third, I'd have passed my old man."
Some of the most colorful performances and word pictures come from the boxing ring. There have been big names in the sport. Names like Dempsey, Tunney, Lewis, Marciano, and many more have battled their ways to the Sports Hall of Fame. But all the arguments haven't been inside the ring. For example, here are a few comments made after the controversial Dempsey-Firpo scrap in 1923.
"They both had the same dressing room, except one was in a corner because it was for baseball players. So Firpo was in one corner, Dempsey was in the other corner. After the fight was over, they bent down to unlace their shoes, a very natural movement, and when you do so, sometimes you look up. Firpo looked up and saw Dempsey in the other corner. Dempsey looked up and he saw Firpo in the other corner. Firpo said something in Spanish. Dempsey didn't understand it, thought he was referring to him, so both men got up and were going to fight again. Took 10 cups and a boy to break them apart."
Comebacks have always made headlines in prize fighting, and one of the greatest was Joe Louis's after he'd been defeated by Max Schmeling. The return match was in 1938, and the issue was not long in doubt. In fact, Lewis seemed hardly winded as he stepped to the microphones after the first round knockout.
I waited 2 years for the revenge, and now I got it.
Boxing has had its lighter moments, too. Remember the way two-ton Tony Galeno used to promise? I'll moiter him. He sounded a little different, though, after he met Joe Lewis in the ring.
I had lobar type 3 pneumonia before that fight. I was warned by the doctors not to fight for 2 years. Then I took the fight with Lewis. When Lewis seen I was not in the proper shape, I weighed 250 when I started to train, and I got down to 230. But still in all, the doctors warned me about fouling, and then the commissioners called me in with two telegrams. I was never a dirty fighter. If my elbow got caught in the guy's face, it was an accident. If I got a thumb caught in the guy's face, it was an accident, too. But when you got those things on your mind, you're worrying about developing a heart condition. You're worrying about going to 15 rounds. And everything bothered me. I went in and fought the guy, and if he'd have fought me again, I would have murdered the buck.
And Buddy Bear, too, fared badly in the ring with Lewis, but set some kind of a record for candid confessions when he said,
I think the only way I could have beaten Joe is with a baseball bat.
Names, personalities, the people who make sports what they are. In the sport of kings, one of the most colorful was sportscaster Clem McCarthy. There have been few, if any, greater moments than the heralded match between two of the outstanding thoroughbreds of history, and Clem was at the microphone the day War Admiral raced Seabiscuit.
And the head and head Seabiscuit on the inside by a neck with War Admiral second as they're turning to the stretch. Head and head, both horses under a drive. This is a real horse race, just what we hoped we'd get. They're head and head, and both jockeys driving. It's the best horse from here in. They've got 200 yards to come. It's horse against horse. Both of them driving. Seabiscuit leads by a length. Now Seabiscuit by a length and a half. Wolf has put away his whip. Seabiscuit by three. Seabiscuit by three. Seabiscuit is the winner by 4 lengths.
And so it could go. Baseball, football, racing, boxing, tennis, golf, track, and all the rest. Radio and television have made every American almost a participant in his favorite sport. On records and tapes, the memorable sights and sounds of the past live again. And tomorrow, and the day after, and all the days after that, America will be there for new thrills, heartbreaks, laughs, and even more phenomenal records as the men on the field and the men at the mics bring us great moments in sports casting. These recorded bits of sports history have been presented by the Philco Corporation, selected by Sports Illustrated Magazine.